This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
If you have health insurance, you might be able to see a personal dietitian for $0 out of pocket. Nourish connects you with a dietitian that fits your needs, covered by your insurance. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans, and 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. With hundreds of five-star reviews from real patients, you know you're in good hands. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Hello, everybody. Here we go on a Friday. Chad Hartman, Dave Harrigan, Newstalk 830 WCCO. Good stuff for you for the next 3 hours, including a chat with a frequent guest and a familiar name in the state of Minnesota, the former governor, Tim Pawlenty. Tim is kind enough to join us right from the get-go, and Tim is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Now, I saw a statement yesterday from you. And this is after the news came out that Tina Smith will not seek re-election in 2026. You commented on the opportunity for Republicans and said you were not running for the position. I'm assuming you put that out there because you really wanted to break the news right here on this show, your favorite show, that you are running for the Senate seat, and we can break this. Dave, do you have the breaking news sounder?
This is great news.
Yes, yeah. This is good. Go ahead. Well, let us know.
I was so interested in breaking that news on your show, Chad, that I sent it out 24 hours ago before coming on here today. So that gives you a sense of the stack rank order of it.
Wow. Dave, we have feelings. Does he realize this, that, you know, we're humans? Okay, let's get serious. When the news broke, did any part of you say, why not? Or do you just look at this and say, that was a part of my life, I've moved on, I'll still be an observer, I'll still be a part of it, but I just don't want to jump into that part of my life again?
Well, you know, serving in the United States Senate for anybody would be a high honor, including me. It would be a really meaningful opportunity to further serve Minnesota. But I have done a lot of that in my life, both as a governor and legislator, majority leader and city council member, planning commission person. And so I've poured a lot of my life into public service and into serving Minnesota. But I do think this is now a test for the Republican Party in Minnesota, having not won a statewide election since I last ran in 2006, having not won a presidential race since statewide since Nixon, but political scientists would say that was a wave election, so you got to go back to Eisenhower. So we'll really see now, Chad, if the party, my party, has the capacity, the wisdom, the discernment to pick somebody who can actually win this race. And they've got a terrible recent track record of that at the convention and frankly, in the primaries, too. So we'll see. I hope and believe, and I'm going to work to try to find somebody who fits that bill. And I hope that they do. It's a tremendous opportunity. Still, you know, an uphill climb in a blue state, and these Senate races get nationalized and national money pours in. But it's the best opportunity Republicans have had in modern history, but one I'd like to see somebody else step up and take.
What role would you like to play?
You know, I would be happy to help that person if that individual, you know, fits the description I just mentioned. You know, you cannot run a, you know, a knucklehead in Minnesota and expect to win. It's not that kind of state. Again, it's at least light blue, maybe dark blue. We're going to have a top-shelf candidate with an appeal beyond just the Republican Party, because there's more Democrats than Republicans still in Minnesota. And if we get a candidate who is qualified, you know, knows the issues, has a pragmatic approach to solving problems and can win, you know, I'd excitedly get behind that person, help raise money, give him or her advice, and do what I can to support them.
Is it fair to say on some prominent positions over the last 10, 15 years, you think your party has offered up some knuckleheads for these most discussed positions?
Yes. No question.
How come?
Well, I think it's because the Republican Party, and frankly the Democrats, have the analog problem on the other side. For all the reasons we've discussed in the past, both parties have drifted towards being controlled by an endorsing process, which very few people participate in, that takes place in the spring. And even in the primary, in the dead of summer in August, very few people, 10%, maybe 15% on a good year, show up to vote. And those are the most activated, most, you know, passionate, some would say extreme people in the state. And they don't reflect broader perspective in the state. And we need more people to participate, or the people to who do participate, at least to factor in electability as a criteria beyond just purity of what they believe to be the ideological viewpoint that they support.
This is Tim Pawlenty, the former governor, the 39th governor of the state of Minnesota. Chad Hartman here with you on WCCO. How optimistic are you that both parties, the party that you support, Republicans and Democrats, will look and say, we still have a significant portion of our state which is in the center, center right, center left. Let's go with 60%. That when this race is taking place next summer, it will be reflected by that part of the party. That's what I would love to see, but I got to be honest, Tim, I am skeptical. I keep looking at what the tone is all across the country. And unfortunately, I'm expecting to see someone who's further to the left and someone who is further to the right.
I think the calculation, Chad, is a little different for the Democratic Party in Minnesota than the Republican Party for this reason. If you're a Democrat and you can run a so-called base election, in other words, throwing the red meat out to the base and driving and optimizing turnout of Democrats and center-left independents, and there's enough of those around to potentially win in Minnesota with a so-called base election. There aren't enough Republicans to do that in Minnesota. And so the Republicans have to factor in the ability to reach some support, either because the person's a celebrity or because they have some independent or populist appeal or because of something. You know, they're, you know, a former wrestler, they're a former Navy SEAL, something. They're well known already. That draws in people. So the calculation's a little different. And so far in the last, those, you know, call it 15 years, Republicans have mostly failed that test. But this time, maybe, after you lose enough and bang your head against the wall long enough, maybe they'll come to their senses and nominate a candidate like I'm describing.
So it's obviously very early. We're about 26 hours after Senator Smith made her announcement. But as you look at your party, and some names have showed interest, some names people are speculating on, and they're well-informed, and the chances are pretty strong they'll jump in. From the people in the mix, from your party, do you have someone who is an ideal candidate or a couple candidates who you think could win the core Republicans and also appeal to some of the moderates and independents you just were talking about in your last answer?
Yeah, I think there are a number of people like that, and we'll see if they run. But, you know, you've spent some time with Lisa Daymuth, for example, the new Republican mm-hmm. Speaker of the Minnesota House. I don't know if she's interested. I know your friend and mine, Michelle Tafoya, has thought about running for various things over the years. I don't know if she's interested. There are some names that are former sports figures who would like to run for something like this. We'll see if they might be interested. But also, Chad, keep in mind there is a possibility, if you're a Republican, to factor in the Democrats making a bad decision in their candidate selection as well. So there's a big difference from a Republican standpoint against running in somebody like Tim Walz, even though he's now got diminished numbers, or say Angie Craig, and, or running against somebody like Ilhan Omar. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people who are not Republicans in Minnesota who are not going to vote for Ilhan Omar in a statewide race. And they're, you know, they're dumb enough to potentially nominate her. We'll see.
Oh, you're so good at this. It's very good. Okay, so let's talk about Walz. You faced this decision, right? You decided after two terms, that's it. I'm not going to run for a third term. And there's a history in the state running for third terms. Really, there's a history across the country with governors running for third terms and issues. Walz is facing that dilemma. And then this all of a sudden falls in his lap. You know him a little bit, but I don't think the two of you have talked in the last 24 hours. What is your sense on the situation he is facing and where political history and maybe reading the tea leaves where he's at right now in the state, where he might go? Because it's obvious he's giving deep consideration to this position.
Yeah, just jumping back, by the way, to your previous question, I would throw in Peggy Flanagan as a candidate that the Democrats might nominate that would be very vulnerable in a statewide election in terms of being able to beat her. So that's another footnote to the previous question. As to Governor Walz, I think he's in a really interesting pickle box, or maybe he's got a lot of options in this sense. I think he was thinking, obviously, he was going to be VP. That charted a future for him that didn't happen. If Biden or had won, and even though he had not been possibly selected for VP, he maybe would have ended up in the cabinet. But now he's in this situation where he's been governor for two terms, and it's unusual, almost unheard of, for a governor in Minnesota to run three consecutive terms. So he's going into some semi-uncharted territory, and he's probably thinking that's a little underwhelming after already been there 8 years, but he's got nowhere else politically to go, and he's not done yet. He doesn't want to quit yet. So switching over to the Senate race would on the surface seem appealing, but keep in mind, he's lived in Washington. He's commuted back and forth to Washington on planes a big chunk of his life. He's not young anymore. And he may look at that and go, you know, I kind of did that life, and I'm not sure I want to go back and do that again. And yet, granted, it's the Senate, which is different than the House. So I think he's probably facing a bit of a dilemma. And I think being governor is probably a better platform in the sense that you're an executive, you got the bully pulpit, you're sort of the leader of the discussion. In the Senate, you go out there, you're the junior, most junior member of the Senate, and as you know, you don't get to be a committee chair for a decade, and you don't have much influence unless you're around a while. So I don't know what he's going to do, but I could see where he would look at the Senate race and go, it's a good way out, it's my last path that's not governor. But I could also see him say, personally, I don't want to sit on airplanes and go back and forth in Washington for the last 10 best years of my work career.
Two last questions. We'll let you go. It's Tim Pawlenty, the 39th governor of the state of Minnesota, with just tremendous observations on what's going on in the state. Well, actually, before I get to the last one, do you have a Valentine's gift already lined up for your bride? Is that already set?
I did. I did deliver myself the flowers and a handwritten note this morning. We are going out to dinner tonight, so it's, you know, modest, but I'm making an effort. Hopefully, I'm trying to stay out of the doghouse.
Yeah,
how about
I think
you?
You've done. Yes, I'm good. I'm all set.
You're good.
I'm in similar circumstance as you, so I think I'm in good shape at this point. I haven't looked at the text yet. But I guarantee you, I'm going to get texts from Democrats, from folks who lean left, who will say, man, why won't the Republicans run somebody like Tim Pawlenty? And then I think back to about 20 years ago, when many of those same Democrats were like, man, this guy is too far to the right. What's happened in Minnesota? How do you react to that? Do you feel like you've changed or just the politics has changed?
Both. As you get wiser, I've learned a lot in the last 20 or 30 years, and I've changed my views on some things because I have a different view of issues than I used to. And so I probably have changed. But I think politics has changed. I mean, let's give you a couple quick. I know you got to go, but John Kennedy yep. was president as a Democrat. He was a pro-life, pro-military interventionist, tax-cutting Democrat who probably couldn't get endorsed in today's Democratic Party. Ronald Reagan had a so-called amnesty bill for immigration. When he was governor of California, he was pro-choice. He actually did raise taxes while he was president, the gas tax or transportation tax, and other things that people would look at and say, you know, he probably couldn't get endorsed as a Republican today. So is it changing? Yes, it always changes. And that's a good thing, Chad. We want America is never is not changing. Nothing stays the same. So we all have to evolve. Parties have to evolve. Individuals have to evolve. It's the nature of life. It's the nature of politics. And it's overall a good thing.
Always appreciate it, sir. Enjoy your day, and we'll reach out soon.
All right, pal. See ya.
Tim Pawlenty right here. 22 past 12. We got time to squeeze in texts and phone calls reacting to what Mr. Pawlenty had to say. You know how to reach out. Phone call or text 651-461-9226.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Dave. Valentine's Day. It's got to be part of the theme, right? What do we have?
Well, it doesn't have to be, but it certainly is yeah. this time. We're not going traditional, you know, love songs. Anyone can do that, Chad. Anybody can do that. Instead, we're going with...
Adam would come up with that idea, in yeah, other words, right?
Exactly. And he'd pat himself on the back all day long for just a genius move.
Do you know he's watching his girls in the state tournament as opposed to going on a drunken weekend with his buddies?
It's about time you know he stepped up.
Did he mention that? I don't know if he mentioned that.
I think I did hear that a time or two.
Yeah.
We have bands and artists whose names are in some way connected to Valentine's Day or the things you do, the things you perhaps give. So, of course, we had to start out with Anarchy in the UK by... the one and only Sex Pistols.
So, somewhere in there is something tied to love.
Yes, yeah, somewhere in the name of the group or the artist themselves, mm-hmm. tied to Valentine's Day.
Yeah. In this case, it's pistols. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's exactly right, yes.
That's what I thought.
Gunplay.
Well, we got plenty of it. My guy, the Trickster, has called in. Trickster, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chad. Yeah, fabulous interview. I wish.
Thank you.
Tim, I wish the governor could have taken a couple of phone calls because what I find intriguing, of course, is the name Michelle Tafoya coming up. You know, not a active Republican, and you know, it, within the party in that, but I think she would be a pretty remarkable candidate out there, and we'll have to see how things go forward and with her name and how the party would receive her. What do you think?
Well, Michelle is a formidable person and is smart, is comfortable publicly, and is now fully a part of Republican dialogue through her politics, through her tweets, her appearances on Fox. You know, she came out and endorsed Kendall Qualls. She's been asked before. You know, with two seats open, I would say to my friend Limo, if she's ever going to do it, this is the time to do it. We're about the same age. I'm thinking Michelle's in her late 50s. She would create name recognition. She can appeal to some center folks. But then people are going to judge where she stands on issues. And it wouldn't be one of these things, Trickster, where, you know, if she threw her hat in the ring, let's go with that cliche, that everybody would back away. There isn't one candidate in this race, either side, where somebody's going to back away. I hope we have a lot of high-quality candidates who jump in, and Michelle would be one of those. And she would be an absolute factor in the race. Would she win? I don't know, because you still have to see how you hold up. But somebody who would fade away quickly, no, there's no chance of that if she jumps in.
I'm also wondering, you know, Ben Burke was Scott Jensen's lieutenant governor candidate. I don't know, is Ben, did he hurt himself by being the candidate with Scott? I don't know. But would Ben be in the mix possibly for the gubernatorial nod or for the Senate seat, or where you go with him also when Governor Pawlenty was talking about athletes and people of that profile? So,
Trickster, I'm going to let you go. I appreciate it. Be well. Trickster, of course, talking about Matt Burke. We're going to reach out to Matt next week. I want to see. I was thinking about reaching out to Matt earlier, and now that this is going on, let's reach out, Dave. Let's say maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week, and see if Matt wants to add anything to this conversation. Among your text, Tim P is one of your top guests. You're fortunate to have that relation with him, so your listeners can hear him in the program. What a class individual. Dems running Ilhan is the only thing that would give GOP a chance of winning. GOP seems pathologically unable to find decent candidates. Jensen, Burke, Royce White, and the tarantula-throwing escort. I forgot her. Marissa Simonetti? Is that who that was, Dave? The tarantula lady?
I have to look that up.
Oh, my God. That was good. More text. I'm a Democrat. I would absolutely consider voting for common sense Republican like Tim Pawlenty. Great interview as usual, Chad. Thank you. Why are you talking to a socialist about Republican politics? Chad, let's see. The best candidate the Democrats could run for Senate is Matt Klein. He's exactly what Republicans need today. Then another Democrat saying, give me a break. I would want no part of Tim Pawlenty. I'm not saying there would be a long, long line of Democrats voting for Tim Pawlenty. I'm saying more Democrats are saying, why won't the Republicans run individuals who are closer to Tim Pawlenty's politics today than some of the others, some of the true hardcore believers in MAGA? But plenty of them, Dave, I can assure you, when it was 02 when he was running, when it was 06 when he was running, they're like, get out of here. He's way too out of the mainstream. But to his credit, because I think Pawlenty's just very unvarnished and honest in his commentary, he also acknowledged where he's changed, where he is talking about, basically telling us he's moved a little bit more towards the center, and his party has moved further to the right. We got a cheater in our midst, Dave Harrigan. An absolute cheater. We need to discuss this topic with said cheater, who's next on CCO. Dave Harrigan, before we bring the cheater into the conversation, what is today about loyalty and commitment? Is that part of what Valentine's Day is all about?
Absolutely. It's about finding that one person that you love, you cherish, you want to spend the rest of your life with, and being devoted to them.
Yeah. Not multiple. Mm-mm. Not camping around, not tramping around. So now we bring Major. Major Garrett. our guy into the conversation. And I'm looking at a work email today. I'm looking at a work email, and I'm seeing, who did Vanita have on today? You know, Vanita does a great job with the morning news, and I'm going through. And I said, wait a second. Dave, are there two major Garretts?
I don't believe there are.
I mean, because it said Major Garrett, CBS News. And I mean, I'm thinking, what's the coincidence that CBS has two Major Garretts? Because I know Major Garrett on a Friday. He's locked into this show, Dave, right? 12:35 or 12:37, 12:38, whatever it might be. He's here, right? Were you wearing lingerie when you were on with Vanita today? I mean,
come on.
Jeez. I mean, from flowers, some chocolate. I mean, did I get a note? I'm tired of you. It's grown stale. Any of that. I didn't get any of that.
Do I get a word in edgewise? Yes or no?
We got to go to a break. Let's take a pause right now.
Here we go.
Okay, cheater. Go ahead.
Let me explain. So, we have to go back to last evening for this story. Okay. Last evening, my colleague, Margaret Brennan, moderator of Face the Nation, our chief foreign correspondent, was on the plane with Secretary of State Marco Rubio, heading to Munich, where she was going to do many interviews and anchor half of Face the Nation on Sunday. I was to anchor the D.C. back half of the show. The plane took off. There was a mechanical issue. It came back to Andrews. A smaller plane was outfitted for the Secretary of State, too small for Margaret and others and the traveling press corps. So Margaret stayed, meaning she's going to do all of Face the Nation this Sunday. However, I got a text late last night. Can you do the morning Face the Nation radio hits? As a kindness to my colleague, Margaret Brennan, I agreed to do the morning radio hits, of which WCCO is one of nine. One of nine. One of nine. Did you hear me? Yeah. Yeah. So I
sounds
did
like
nine
Temptation Island to me, Dave.
Nine mistresses.
Temptation Island.
Nine radio hits to help my colleague, Margaret Brennan, and explain the guests coming up on Face the Nation, because I am a loyal, devoted employee of CBS News.
Dave, that sounds like somebody who had too much to drink, got caught in the eyes of somebody at the bar, and is trying to explain his way out of it the next day. Is that what you're hearing, Dave Aragon?
A lot of people can talk about experiences with, you know, things that have happened in their personal life, and that other person always just seems to have a great excuse. They've always got that great alibi.
Yes. That's it. Dave, what will we take as, compensation? You know, maybe tickets to a Padres game.
Wait a minute. I don't even understand the source of your reckless peevishness. I'm talking to you right now. What are you losing?
Okay. If you want, I'll give you, let's see, I'm going to give you about 74 names, and I want you to get in a text thread. What is the source of Chad's reckless peevishness? And I want you to carve out, about 48 hours or so, and just let everybody jump in, because that's a fair question to be asked.
Jump in. The water's warm.
Yes, that's right. Okay, before we get, we'll take a pause. We'll get to serious stuff here. Obviously, we're joking. Mm-hmm. Your bride, the love of your life. Is this like one of those Lexus car commercials for Christmas? What do we got?
She's in California.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm by myself. She's in California. Yeah.
Dave, let's speculate. Major Garrett on his own in D.C. on Valentine's Day. Dave, where do you see him?
In his apartment by himself, where he wants
exactly.
to be.
Bingo.
Yeah. I see him at a Doge event. you know, with Elon and the kids the Resolute Desk, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Wearing a
All right, let's pause.
Will Doge for a pay.
Among our topics, Mitch McConnell, that Musk press conference, J.D. Vance, and plenty of other items with the best in the business. We love having him on. Major Garrett from CBS, right back with him. Okay, we got a long run here to cover a number of political items. I want to start with the former Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, who has been a force in Republican politics in the nation's capital for decades. And we know the strong policy differences. We know the strong personality differences. Actually, let me correct myself. Not strong political differences between McConnell and Trump, but more a strong approach, believing in the norms, believing maybe in more respect of words. But in the end, Mitch McConnell, who wanted Donald Trump out, did not want Donald Trump back in D.C., but then he did endorse him. And so now when we've had the votes involving much discussed and controversial figures, if you believe they were controversial, and Gabbard and Kennedy, the two votes, one for each position, one for each of all the senators who voted against Gabbard and Kennedy, both times, Mitch McConnell. Then Donald Trump, in a grotesque comment, when he's asked yesterday in the Oval Office about Mitch McConnell, starts raising the idea, I don't even know if he had polio. Again, going to the bottom of the barrel, as the president is wont to do, when clearly Mitch McConnell, earlier in his life, dealt with polio. How much of a plot line will the McConnell-Trump storyline be over the next couple years, Major?
Not much. I mean, seriously. Mitch McConnell knows how to lobby senators. He knows how to throw his weight around, and he didn't. So he voted against RFK and Gabbard and Hegseth. They all got confirmed. He didn't do anything to mobilize Republicans. And remember, Mitch McConnell's legacy is summarized in one sentence. Three Supreme Court justices.
Yep.
Period. And he also was in a position to leverage, lobby, muscle Republicans to convict Trump at the second impeachment trial after January 6th. He did not. He then condemned President Trump after he had been cleared, assuming the politics would never come back around. Well, they have, and McConnell finds himself a largely isolated and, by his own decision, someone who's not maneuvering and muscling or trying to persuade other Republicans to take a stand against Trump. He's just by himself. And until he begins to flex any muscle that denies Trump anything, I think he's sort of a one-note story.
What was your view of how this press gathering, they happen often with the president in the Oval Office. This time it was with Elon Musk answering questions about Doge while he's with his son. While his son is whispering things to the president, yeah. It was just a bizarre juxtaposition. While Trump is sitting there, just the byplay and the dialogue and the dynamics between the two.
So Trump got tired of having to answer questions for Musk. So he does two things, has Musk answer questions and counter-programs the Time magazine cover, which, don't kid yourself, Trump cares about deeply. Time magazine cover showing Elon sitting behind the Resolute Desk. Nope, Trump sitting behind the Resolute Desk. And he's paying attention or not paying attention to Elon. You can sort of read his body language and facial expressions. So he's sort of in and out of whatever Elon is saying. And it's a way of reminding Elon and the public that President Trump is at the desk. Elon is there at his sufferance and has a wide area of latitude. And Elon Musk is going in lots of places. Trump is not using the language he did a week ago talk about kickbacks and corruption, because he knows if he keeps saying kickbacks and corruption, reporters like me who raise this instantly will say, well, okay, bring the cases then. Charge them. And we know that's not going to happen. We know there's spending that they don't like.
Right.
Fine. If you're the executive branch and you have some discretion, cancel it. Fine. That's within your purview. Go ahead. But don't say kickbacks and crimes and corruption unless you intend to go to court. And everything else that isn't that, you have got at one level or another to deal with Congress, because things that are authorized and appropriated by Congress have legal protections. You may not like them, but here's what. Here's an idea, Mr. President. I don't know if you thought about it. Government funding expires in the middle of March. What does that mean, Mr. President? It means you have to pass an appropriations bill. How about you list all the things you think are most odious, put them on a piece of paper, send them to Congress, and get them to cancel them?
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yep.
Yes. How about that? And if they're so repellent and you have so much political momentum, prove it. It's right there, sitting there waiting for you. All you have to do is put a list together, things that Elon found that are terrible, indefensible, send them to Congress, they cancel it, problem solved. Court cases all disappear.
Yep. Well, you know that debate, right, and you've answered a lot of it, but why don't you expand even further? This has become part of the political discourse, this debate on transparency, right, where
right.
The president, Musk, and his supporters are saying, oh, my God, this is as transparent as it gets. He's telling us, and then others will say, now, hold on a second. Yes, he's telling us, but number one, where's the proof? Can we see something where it's documented? And two, as you just said, oh, by the way, you have the power within your position to do something specifically about it. Let's see if you're going to do that.
Right, right. And Elon Musk said, well, we're going to put everything on the website. Not much is there to date. Not much at all. And Trump says, well, we got to get rid of the Education Department. Okay, what does the Education Department mostly do? It provides Pell Grants, it provides student loans, and it provides special education funding. Okay, that's the vast majority of the federal Education Department budget. Are those things corrupted? Are those things terrible? Are those things wasteful? Pell Grants, student loans, and special education funding that states do not want to take over 100%, mm-hmm. not in Minnesota, mm-hmm. not in Alabama, not in Mississippi, not in Missouri, not in New York, and not in California. They just don't. It is part of the way the federal government assists local school districts deal with children who have special and, yes, slightly more costly needs. It's one of the great achievements of our last 30 years in education. We don't do everything well, but we've done that much better than people assumed we would when this all got started 3 decades ago. Are you going to cancel all of that? I'd like to see that happen.
Major is here.
I'd like to see the politics of that play out.
Right. I would be very curious, too. Okay, let's talk. You tell me what J.D. Vance was doing today as... He's with a lot of our allies. It appeared to me, from consuming some of this and reading accounts, it was a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lecture of, follow us.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't follow us, we're going to be keeping score. And also, some of the voices that you're trying to shout down, you're making a mistake because, you know, freedom of speech matters. By the way, ironically enough, when AP will not go with Gulf of America, the administration, which is all about free speech and you're entitled to it, they're banning the Associated Press unless they go with this nonsense of Gulf America. So we're really for that free speech and that First Amendment and your freedom of ideas as long as they align with us.
Right. You can't cover the government unless you say exactly what the government says. Huh. That's not how I've interpreted the First Amendment. And yes, this is a lecturing tour. Pete Hegseth got it started in the NATO conference, basically saying, you guys have got to spend a lot more, lots more. Don't make America a sucker. Don't make us Uncle Sucker. We're not going to be a sucker anymore. NATO's good, but it has to be good on our terms, not your terms or not alliance terms. And then J.D. Vance comes in, the vice president, says, Trump's the leader of the free world. Trump's telling you what to do. And either you do it or we're going to have strained relations and go our own way. Okay. That's what he said. We'll see how Europe interprets it, and we'll see the shelf life of that. Look, the great question for America under Trump is, can America be all that it only wants to be, period, in relationship to no one else, friend or foe? We're going to be what we are, and everyone has to take us on our terms. Are we big enough? Are we that strong? Guess what, America? We're going to find out.
So let's stay with Vance, because Vance and Secretary of State Rubio are meeting with President Zelensky, the leader of Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
President making news again every 5 minutes yesterday in another press gathering, saying he trusts Vladimir Putin with the war in Ukraine. I find that not surprising, but still stunning. If I can put those two together somehow, that a president would say it, stunning. That Donald Trump would say it, not stunning. Where do you and your sources think we are potentially heading with an attempt of a resolution of the war, of Russia's attempt to conquer Ukraine?
So it is the reporting we have at CBS that the president believes he can negotiate Putin into something that is not appeasement, that's not Neville Chamberlain and Adolf Hitler, that ends the war, protects Ukraine's territorial sovereignty, maybe doesn't give everything back to the Ukrainians that they lost starting in 2014, but ends this war. Trump believes that. Believes he can talk Putin into that by essentially saying, look, on the other side of this war, you can rebuild your military, you can rebuild your economy, and you can re-enter the world stage. Until this war ends, you can't do any of those things, assuming Putin will see the rationality of that. What that skips over is 3 years of irrationality prosecuting this war. All those things have happened. Russia's economy is weaker, the ruble's weaker. His military is not ravaged, but it's in nowhere near the shape it was in before the war. He's having to use North Korean forces, either as supplementary or in the battlefield. All of that doesn't really help Russia, but he persists, and he continues to bomb, even as Trump talks about achieving peace. What's missing from all of this, and so that's Trump's theory. He can bring this to a conclusion. But there are a lot of hard realities that the Secretary of State, the Defense Secretary, and Trump don't even deal with. Okay, let's say Russia leaves. Who guarantees and how is it guaranteed that they're never going to come back? Well, you got to put troops there. Is it Ukrainian troops? Probably not, because Russia won't accept that. Is it international peacekeeping troops? If so, who provides them? And under what auspices? And with what rules of engagement? I mean, if this is going to be peace, Ukraine's not going to accept peace if it means a glowering, threatening Russian bear is always there salivating over it perpetually. That's no way to live.
Yep. No.
And if NATO membership is off the table and everything else, what are the terms? All to be discussed, but Trump doesn't give the Ukrainians any reason right now for optimism that he's on their side or will look out for their interests.
Tremendous information. Have a fabulous weekend. Thanks for the help this week, and I'll talk to you next week.
You got it. See you.
Major Garrett, up next hour, Shaletta, right at the start, here on the home of the Twins, CCO.